This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
One way to more deeply understand the human brain is to understand what's unique about the human genome and how that evolved. The science of stem cells allows us to do that by comparing our own genome to that of our ancient cousins, the Neanderthal. The motion picture William is a story about a Neanderthal living among modern humans, and I was able to visit with the creator and director Tim Disney to discuss the real issues explored by this fantasy, when we had the chance for science to meet fiction.
Hello everyone, I'm here with Tim Disney, and we're going to be discussing something about Neanderthals and how they fit in our culture. And we're going to take advantage that he's the director of this movie about the cloning of Neanderthal.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here and to tour your labs. It was incredible.
So you toured the lab. I told you more or less what we are doing. What do you think about that?
I think it's a strange feeling to be maybe the last generation that will go bald and die of natural causes. That maybe young people, that will never happen to them. Uh-huh. And I mean that only semi-jokingly, you know, yeah. I think that we're at a tipping point now with understanding how to guide stem cells to do different things. But we're on the verge of where medicine or medical care is going from the auto repair model to the horticulture model. We'll grow the things that we need rather than cut and saw and use wrenches and screws and things. I mean, there this will still be some of that.
Yeah.
And thank God that they're so good at that. But the whole thing is turning on its end. And I think it's really important that we develop ethics around these things because I don't think our ethics are anywhere near where our science is. So that was another motivation for making the movie, is maybe to put this idea out there. You know, it's a Neanderthal in the case of this, but it could be any type of altered, you know, human consciousness.
So this is a very unique movie. And can you tell us about what the movie talks about and how you come out with this idea?
The idea of this movie came from... I'm kind of an obsessive reader, and I got into a reading jag about early humans and our development. And a couple of things that really stood out to me from the reading that I did were two things. One is how recent we are as a species, you know, maybe 25,000 generations or something like that. And secondly, that we coexisted with at least three other human species. And the Neanderthals are the best known of those. And in the most of the traditional scientific literature you read, there's some version of the story that they died off because we Homo sapiens were more intelligent than they were. Mm-hmm. And I got irritated by reading that over and over again. I thought, what if they died out not because they were less intelligent, but because they were better than us, that they were more virtuous than us? So that was the core of the idea, basically.
And that's a very provocative idea. My belief that is the other way around, but the truth is that nobody knows. We all want to know where do we come from? I mean, who we are and where we are going to. And I have the same kind of questions, and that's how I start working on Neanderthals, trying to understand ourselves. So do you recall, do you remember when exactly do you have been in touch with those
I'm not sure exactly. I think the book that got me going on this, I read the book Guns, Germs, and Steel, you know, the Jared Diamond book, you know, which is an extraordinary book. I started reading other things written by the same gentleman, Jared Diamond. And one of his first books is called The Third Chimpanzee, where he, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that book, but that really got me going on this, you know, that how close we are. How unbelievably close we are, even to chimpanzees and to a lesser extent gorillas. So, like, what is it? What is the difference? And what difference does that difference make? You know, got became interesting to me. So then, you know, I thought, because my interest in it was more literary than scientific, you know, how that might how that might apply on a large scale and then also on a domestic scale.
The characters in the movie, the main characters, I mean, or two of the main characters, I mean, the couple who decided to clone the Neanderthals, how do you evolve their personalities? They are, I found it, at least, I mean, the male character, a little bit, I'm going to prove my way of doing. It's kind of almost like a narrow-minded scientist. And it is a stereotype. I mean, I'm not saying that we don't find those kind of scientists around. We do. But it is on more like the stereotype way of a scientist trying to prove by all means that I'm right and I'll do whatever it takes.
They are stereotypes. That was a bit of an intention that they're archetypes, I think, more than stereotypes. I think the father is probably a villain in the story. He has a point to make. Yeah. You know, when he has an argument with the mother and he says he needs to be challenged, you can't hide him away from the world, I think we buy that.
Right.
You know, so he's got a point. And then the mother, for her part, spoiler alert, I shouldn't say before you see the movie, at the end, I think that she always believes the story that has been written for William, like that he's a dangerous, what if he, like the university administrator says at the beginning, that what if he goes on a violent rampage and kills someone? I think she fundamentally believes that about him and wants to prevent it from happening. And so when the events of the end happen, I think she, in a sense, fails her son as well.
One thing that I found it fascinating, how you kind of frame the discussion with the university. If the university would allow such kind of experiments, and there are reasons why we shouldn't do it, and there are reasons why, well, maybe there is an opportunity here. I mean, how... why do you include that discussion?
Well, I happen to be a trustee of two colleges and chairman of one of them. I'm chairman of the board of CalArts. It's a wonderful art school. So I have a little window into university administration. So I enjoyed it from that angle. But, you know, obviously there's an enormous ethical question about this.
Yeah.
So the ethical question is inherent to the story, and I just wanted to leave it more to the viewers rather than have all the people talk about it on screen.
And I think from another scientific perspective is this idea of finding a Neanderthal soft tissue where the cloning could be done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right now we have, it's hard to say impossible in science, but we have no reason to believe that this would be possible.
No, that's, I mean, I tried to make the science as plausible as I could.
Right.
And I think we did okay with that.
Yeah.
I think that the basic technique that they describe is possible, is plausible, plausible enough anyway. Yeah. The idea of the bog body, you know, that's a fiction. I happened to see some bog bodies right at the same time I was on reading all of this. I was in Dublin, Ireland, and went to the museum there where there's, you know, there's a lot of peat bogs in Ireland. So there are quite a few of these bog bodies, which are just extraordinary. Like they, if you've ever seen them, the facial expressions that are captured, the soft tissue, the hair, they're so evocative of past lives. So I was like, that's got to be in there.
It was inspiring any specific specimen or?
There's one specific specimen that it's based on, but the head of it was created from a life cast of the actor.
Okay.
So it is himself. It's his alter ego or his progenitor, William Prime, we called him.
Right. Any reason for this name, William?
Yeah, in the story, he's named William after William King, who is the naturalist who first proposed that the Neanderthal artifacts were a separate species and actually named them Neanderthals. Yeah, Neanderthalensis, yeah.
Tim, why don't you tell us more about your process to incorporate some of the Neanderthal features into the character?
One of the primary themes of the movie is the presumptions that people make about him based on his Neanderthalness.
Right.
And, you know, Neanderthals are often, are always portrayed in popular culture as crude, brutish beasts. And they were physically stronger than Homo sapiens, shorter, stockier. They had relatively short legs. Their shoulders and elbows were constructed somewhat differently, so they were probably not as good at throwing things. They were designed to take large prey at close range. Many of the skeletons of Neanderthals show the evidence of injuries of the same sort that rodeo clowns get, mm-hmm. who get bowled over by bulls in rings, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. So they were in there doing the business. And just the idea of hunting in that manner reinforces the idea that they were brutes.
Right.
So we were very intent on being as realistic as possible about our physical portrayal of him. So we developed a certain walking gait, and really the actor Will Britton gets credit for doing this, relatively subtle movements that would suggest that physiological difference. We did a little thing with his pants and his shirt and everything just to kind of adjust the ratio between the abdomen and the legs. And I think those things probably play on a very subtle level. You don't think right. about it, but it's right. there. But we also at the same time didn't want to present him as being superhuman. Mm-hmm. I will say that the day before we started filming, the actor did come to me and he said, "I have been lifting weights for 3 months in preparation for this part, and I'm going to take my shirt off in the movie, and I just want to make that clear." So, because I had not included a scene like that, so we wrote one in where he got to take his shirt off, because fair enough, I thought, you know. But in all cases, what we were really trying to go for is realism, like, you know, so he doesn't have any particular extra skill at surviving in the woods, why would he? Like, right. all of that would have been learned behavior.
Exactly, yeah.
And
yeah.
so, you know, he's yeah. just as awkward. And, you know, in some of the original versions of the script, we had him where he was really afraid of the dark or some uh-huh. goofy things to puncture uh-huh. holes in that more.
Eliminate all of that.
Yeah.
I can see exactly what you were going after. And I think you achieved, because, I mean, it puts them very blended together, but different.
Yes, the same, but yeah. different. Different, yeah. but equally human, yeah. which is the way that we need to think of other people in our culture.
You talk about differences or people with conditions where they are physically distinct. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you did an experience with the makeup here, having him walk around and see what's the reaction of people. Tell us more about that experience.
Well, it was curious. We were practicing with the makeup in advance of filming, and the actor, Will Britton, wanted to get some experience of how people would actually react, you know, because the movie is very much about being treated as different. So we did him up in his makeup, and we took him to a mall in suburban Vancouver. And he walked around for several hours and did some shopping and got some lunch and hung out for a while. And it was quite an experience because people definitely noticed him, but really made an effort to not tip their hand. Like, they would look at him and look away. Uh-huh. And I think they did not want to make a show of staring at him, but they would look away and then sneak another look. And people were often over-the-top friendly with him when he went to order something and get a coffee or something. They were more friendly than they, you know, uh-huh. They were extravagant in their overcompensation yeah. of it, which is so curious.
You think that these are all human nature?
Yeah.
We are at our best, let's say, I mean, yeah. trying to accommodate the difference, at the same time not making him uncomfortable.
Yes,
that.
Yes, but still acknowledging the difference, or mm-hmm. You know, it, something is happening that conveys a feeling of alienation to the other person. Nonetheless, you know, I guess, you know, we're all about, you know, with how our language works and everything, about defining the in group and the out group. You know, I can tell that you're not from America.
Right.
You cannot hide that.
Yeah.
You know. Right. And so I guess that's built in to how we are to say, like, okay, he's not one of us. Mm-hmm. And then we have to create all these social structures, conventions, norms to compensate for that. Otherwise, we'd be fighting each other all the time. So right. this is and as the world gets more crowded, more mixed together, it becomes more and more important to develop ethics and norms around these things. Otherwise, we're in bigger trouble than we already are mm-hmm. Around these issues.
Perhaps one of the questions that I like the most is when we compare the humans with other species, we have the social capability that is kind of quite amazing. And even our closest relatives, the chimpanzees, I mean, they as the colony grows bigger, they cannot handle that. I mean, yes. There is a stress and some people have to leave. But we on the opposite. We kind of work it out, our social rules and ways to interact with each other, even acknowledging them that they're coming from different tribes.
Yes.
So we tolerate. I think the word I was looking for is tolerance. We learn how to tolerate. And I think this is an important thing. I'm particularly attracted not only for the science part, but also for all the discussion that you can have about neurodiversity and how someone who is a strange will fit in our culture these days. Was this like an intention for the movie as well?
Yes. You know, I wanted to make a movie about otherness, you know, and how we treat the other. I think we live in a moment of crisis around this as a culture right now, where we have our president is demonizing people who are different in a whole variety of ways. You know, for me, as a middle-aged white man, I didn't want to tell the story in the very direct way, like a young African-American man in a hoodie and how the police respond to him. That's a very... there are other people who can tell that story. I probably shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. I think when we see, when a lot of viewers see that scenario, they say, oh, it's that thing. You know, I know what that is.
Right.
You're just saying this. You know, it's, oh, you're on this side of that. You know, I'm not sure that we make any progress in thinking about it when we present this as scenario in so literal a way. But I thought this was a way of getting at that through the back door, that if we abstract the idea in this manner, that maybe people can think about it in more effectively. But beyond that also, beyond the racial aspect of how he's treated, you know, he's physically imposing, and people consider him to be a risk just by his very appearance. You know, I mean, that's where the obvious racial metaphor plays in. But then there's this other stuff about the cognitive differences.
Mm-hmm.
And so that broadens the idea of what otherness is. He understood the idea of metaphor and abstract thinking. It's not that he was not intelligent enough to comprehend what those were.
Correct.
He just did not value those things. In fact, he found them offensive because they were indirect. They were untruthful.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I mean when I say he's more virtuous than us.
And I love that part. I mean, the abstract thinking, right? I mean, how important it is to our evolution and to enjoy the lifestyle that we have now.
Yes.
On the other side, I mean, how that might be affecting us.
Right.
On our daily life. So I think you kind of managed to add that question. And he's fully aware of that. Right?
Yes, he is. And he tries to make himself fit into that, and he just can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a story is written for him, essentially, that he's a savage beast and he's dangerous. And that story is so powerful that in spite of himself, he ends up living it out. And I think that's what happens to people in our society, too. The story about them is so strong that they cannot escape it.
So we are definitely not ready for someone who thinks differently, or there's going to be a hard acceptance right there.
I think there are lots of people who think differently around, and they suffer some alienation.
Yeah.
You know, it's we have a narrow idea of what is normal.
So let's revisit that question about the ethics and how can we bring society into the conversation, and what you are doing by taking that to the screens. And these are big, really fundamental questions that the humanity wants to know. I mean, we all want mm-hmm. to know where we came from, what happens to the Neanderthals, how close or similar they are with us. And but to get there, I mean, there are technological roadblocks, and it might be that one day all this technology would allow us to do exactly as you propose in your movie, but there are ethical implications for that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see a movie like yours bringing the society or tying everybody together to have this kind of conversation?
Well, I think by creating a piece of entertainment, you know, a piece of storytelling or literature or film as literature or whatever you want to consider it, it brings the familiarity of the characters and the drama and the story that takes place gives access for people to think about what might otherwise sound like a heady, intellectual, argument. Of course, all these moral and ethical questions are not heady things. They're primary things that we're constantly grappling with, but maybe not in so many words. You know, in our own mind, we're constantly making moral judgments and ethical judgments about our own behavior based on a set of norms, then adapted to particular circumstances as we face them. So, you know, I was hoping that I could start a conversation about these topics. You know, and I hope people, if they see this, if they're interested in this, they'll come over and they'll surf over to your work and learn more about it. I think we need more connection between the general public, between the humanities, between the arts, and the technical realms where you operate.
Yeah, I mean, you can see genome editing.
Yes.
3-4 years ago was just like on the board, things that we could do. And then suddenly someone used it in a baby, and we have now babies with genomes being edited, and we have no idea what's the consequence of this technology. And yeah. I would say that's similar to the cloning of Dolly, who caught the society by surprise. People didn't know. I mean, well, they cloned Dolly. Now they can they clone a human? And it's really hard to clone a human, but eventually the technology might catch up, and we
of
might get there.
Of course it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, then there's all kinds of terrible scenarios and also kinds of beautiful scenarios
that
could come from that. I mean, and I think we'll probably have a whole lot of both of those things because that's just what we do as people.
Yeah.
We use it for the best of purposes and the worst of purposes.
Anything else would you like to say about it? Or
it's such a gift and an honor to be invited to participate in this and to see the work that you're doing. I would just say, as someone who's involved in higher education, to be on a UC campus is amazing. The University of California system is like one of the great triumphs of public policy. And I hope that we don't let it slowly die by underfunding it, which is where we are now. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, it's just a thrill to be here. So thanks for having me.
All right, Tim, thank you so much for accepting to come visit us. And I do encourage you to think about those questions. I mean, what if all the theories about Neanderthals were wrong? What if the Neanderthals were not exactly as we expect them to be? So I think it's a really good opportunity to watch the movie and to start thinking about these big fundamental questions about what makes us unique.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.